Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. 27 years into this, we're celebrating with our tastiness and our 27 favorite things to eat. We are down to number 5. We're here at Coco's Pub. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I have the Lucky Sevens Doublers. I actually found an extra stack of the Pressure Luck, so a lot of people pressing their luck here today.
No whammies.
Whammy! we're here at Coco's on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, having some fun. Bill Henry's here. He is the controller of the city of Baltimore. We happen to be in the lovely 3rd District in the city of Baltimore. I had never met Ryan Dorsey before 48 hours ago. You know, it's Coco's 40th anniversary.
Oh.
So they had their huge family and friends celebration on Sunday. So Ryan lives here around the corner, Mayfield. I've got my six friends are coming up here later on. So I was here. I never met him. He said, "Hey, you want to have me on a show?" I'm like, "Yeah." He said, "We just did 58 minutes here." He's a little bit of encyclopedic knowledge in regard to historical data, in regard to transportation, housing, redlining, money, all of that.
Only the best for our Baltimore City Council.
Well, I'm trying. He liked you, too. How are you? How's the city? Donald Trump says it's falling apart. Schittler. I have a new nickname for him. Have you seen it on Facebook?
No. Tell me.
Dick Tater.
That's not new.
No, Dick Tater.
There were people calling Trump one that.
Well, he called himself one.
And he hadn't even done some of the crazy stuff he's been doing this term yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's 50,000 feet. Let's just keep it down.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what's really happening in Baltimore, not the fiction of what's happening in America at this point, which isn't fiction, sadly. It's nonfiction. Crime down, perception, mayor's running around, governor's running for president. Like, I can't keep up with all of it. I'm just going to say this with full conviction and heart to you. I've had many of you on. I didn't think I'd ever meet Ryan Dorsey, let alone have him on for an hour. I just did. Felicia was going to come today but couldn't come. I had never met Mark Conway before a week and a half ago. He sat and did an hour with me. Zach Blanchard, I've met, had him on when he ran. I lived in that district. I was Eric Costello's district. Had him on. I've had Zeke on. Saw the mayor, haven't had him on since all of this. And I've driven into the city. I was at Fadley's last week where you and I misconnected. Sure. I was at Pizza John's in Essex. Saturday I was in the city. Monday I was in the city. It's Wednesday I'm in the city. I'm in the city every other day driving through. I was in the city last Wednesday night. Dear friend of mine works at Hopkins. My wife was out of town. I owed her dinner because she took care of my cat when I was at Mako. And I drove her over to Clavel. So I drove down Harford Road, part of Perry Parkway to Harford, through here, down to, not through here, but through Montebello and Lake Clifton, North Avenue down. And then I went over to Clavel up North Avenue and then went back East Baltimore, and then I took sort of a weird way home that wasn't the Beltway, just to look around. Less trash, less threat, more cleaned up, less homeless. I didn't even see a Baltimore lean. My vibe of driving around is that, like, even driving in here today, like, it feels, and it's not because of what I see on the news, it's just you look around, and it's just cleaner and nicer, and whatever we've done, it's neighborhood to neighborhood, place to place, that it just looks better. Now, that doesn't belie the shootings and whatever is going on and the murders and all that, but just vibe of walking around and feeling it. I know we're on the uptick. I don't think it. I know it because I see it and feel it, and I'm not your PR guy. You know what I mean? I'm just somebody that loves the city, drives the city, and I'm happy to point out its warts, despite my name at Baltimore Positive,
Baltimore has had challenges. I'm not gonna pretend that's not the case. But Baltimore has never been as bad as a lot of its press. We have suffered over the decades. Is that working?
No, you're
working
good. Right? You're on. Okay. I just get you on.
Yeah.
I'm a direct mic guy, Bill. I do this professionally.
Over the years, we've suffered a little bit from the fact that what Baltimore is best known for is violent crime. And that's not just a statistical thing. That's because we've had some really good television that looked at that issue and did a really good job of looking at it and telling people the stories around it, and they took place here. Homicide, A Life, a Year in the Streets, The Wire. These, I've run into
people. They sensationalized crime in Baltimore.
They sensationalized crime in America, but they showed it in Baltimore. So that's what people in other places saw of us.
I didn't even ask Ryan about David Simon, but if Simon would have put that show in Atlanta or Charlotte or Detroit.
Or Philadelphia.
Or anywhere.
Yeah, right. I've said for years that in New York City, Law and Order has been killing people weekly for years. But
it didn't stick to it.
But nobody thinks of New York as nothing but homicide, because they also have Friends and Sex in the City and all these other upbeat sitcom-ish kind of shows that show just ordinary people having fun and living their lives, which
we need to write. It's always sunny in Lauraville is what we need to do.
that actually would, but you joke, but if there was a way to get a hit sitcom based in Baltimore, I think that would do more for our national reputation than trying to get each individual newspaper editor across the country to see
you
the
mean
crime
what Drew
statistics
Carey did
going
for
down.
Cleveland.
Exactly. That is exactly
or
right.
Or what The Office did for Scranton. Right.
Well
maybe not that much.
Yeah.
Bill Henry's here. He is in the office of Comptroller. The money of the city and the tax base of the city and the housing and look, I'll bitch at you like I did with Ryan. I drive Perry Parkway. Fix the potholes on Perry Parkway. If the mayor's here, I'd tell the county that, on the county side of it, right? But just in a general sense, things like that, things like Fox 45 News, things that go wrong, a shooting, the drug overdose that I had I had Emily Keller on from Westmore's office talking about. They called it a mass casualty event. Nobody died. I didn't know nobody died.
They called
it a mass casualty event. I just thought a lot of people died. And Emily's like, nobody died. They had naloxone.
You take a bunch of people to the hospital. That's a mass casualty event.
Okay, but yeah. that word to me, mass casualty, meant like death.
We were very fortunate that in this case there were a lot of casualties, but no one actually
died. But it leads
died.
To new. It's not even in my mind. Death, destruction, And then what dictator's doing? What Arne Schittler's doing? What the Felon King is doing?
You really have a whole list of names for him.
I call him a piece of shit in my private life, but having that sit out in front of the news and having a young black mayor, a young black governor out, F you, come to my town. He ain't coming here. You don't want him anyway. So, but all the posturing, and Wes is running for president. God bless you, Wes. Maybe one day he'll show up. But for me, this black-white city, right-left, and having Trump specifically single us out, try to send the military. I know what the military looks like in this city. So do you. I mean, I remember Freddie Gray.
I do too.
And I lived on the 23rd floor and saw tanks circling my buildings. I can't imagine what the people in D.C. are going through right now. But this does not help our reputation more by just having our governor and our mayor out fighting with the science fiction of the clown that's sitting down in D.C. having North Korean state meetings that I saw. Yeah, that was just yesterday on the internet.
In 2015, during the uprising, when we had National Guard troops in Baltimore City, people talk about what it's like to have the National Guard in your city. For me, it was to walk into City Hall, where my office was as a council person. I had to walk past two
machine
gentlemen
guns.
with automatic rifles.
I had to do that to get into Reggie's. I had to do that to go to Maria D's to get a slice of pizza.
And
right, literally, when I lived there.
And can I tell you what reassured me at the time, I recognized one of them.
Okay.
One of the guys who was posted to the front door of City Hall was Jake Day, who has gone on to be the Secretary
mayor,
of Housing.
Mayor of Salisbury.
He was the mayor.
I know Jake well.
And yeah. And I had known Jake from some environmental work. And he's a
good man.
Super guy.
Good
super
man,
guy.
Jake Day.
Going to make a great congressman someday.
okay.
And
Andy's seat, right?
Pardon?
Andy's seat, right? Okay.
Yeah. So, but seeing Jake there, that helped me remember that all of these, you know, strangers showing up in my town were not all strangers. Some of them were our neighbors just from...
And they really are here. Yeah. We're here to protect you, not to intimidate you.
Yeah, I do worry...
This is an intimidation ploy against people that, quite frankly, don't even look like you. They look like me.
I worry a lot about the fact that they're bringing in National Guardsmen from states far away to...
I'm worried that they're
DC.
Profiling everyone that looks Latin and shaking them down.
Well, yes. Although, did you see... I saw a thing on the internet the other day that there is so little actual crime for the National Guard to deal with.
They're cleaning up trash.
They're cleaning up trash. Mm-hmm. Like
good.
I'm astonished at the amount of money we're spending to bring in people from Iowa.
Yeah, I don't think Brandon's going to have a press conference. They say, "Come on up and do us next."
Oh,
yeah,
actually,
yeah, right, you know?
No, Brandon is going to have a press conference today. Like when you said earlier you haven't seen the mayor, it's like, I can tell you where to see the mayor. The mayor is going to be having a press conference later this afternoon up in Park Heights because we're doing the groundbreaking for the first ever Enoch Pratt Library branch in Park Heights.
How is that possible?
Along with making some additions to the park up there.
How did Park Heights not have an Enoch Pratt? Well, I mean, that's good
news,
though.
Historic disinvestment, and this is an example of actually doing something equitably for the people of Park Heights.
All right. Bill Henry's here. He's the controller of Baltimore, former councilman. So here's where I hold you accountable, all right? Okay. This is where I have the tough question.
Okay.
Yeah, take a drink. You came on with me as Councilman Henry, nice guy down at Fadley's. I think I met you about 6, 7, 8 years ago, whenever it was. I live in a city. Joan Pratt was a bit of a four-letter word, and you know, just in a general sense of as a citizen, you're one of the few politicians I ever endorsed ever. I didn't give you any money because I haven't given any money to anybody since Tom Harkin.
I ran as a Tom Harkin delegate. In 92.
I bought some stamps and worked out of the office right there at Water Street back in the day. No offense, Bill Clinton, but you know. Monica wouldn't have been heard from had Tom Harkin come in from Iowa. But nonetheless, it probably speaks to my bleeding left heart of Bernie Sanders. But you ran on at a time when I think you came and sat in on the show right after Jack Young left, and he was the mayor. Brandon was the city council president. Young guy, didn't have a chance to win. Here we are, 7 or 8 years later. The money of the city, the taxes... The mismanagement, whatever malfeasance, whatever, and then we had malware. We had a software ransom
we did.
Thing, right?
That's
we
right. The ransom
so we had all sorts of things,
yeah.
Right? What did you find, and where are you now? And if I were some auditor, or whatever, came in and a journalist with you know my notepad, what could you show me in your office to say? This is what I inherited. This is where we are. It ain't all fixed. I don't create the money. I just dispense it. There was a faction with the mayor and you and Ivan Bates and his predecessor and the way things were voted upon, right, and budgeting in regard to all sorts of things that a lot of people that live in the city are not aware of. So every time I bring one of the electeds on, I kind of have to schoolhouse rock this from the beginning and say, all right, you know, what is a control? You know what I mean? Like, begin with that, but you began with that 7 or 8 years ago. But you clearly ran as the pissed off councilman about feeling like the city was getting ripped off. And when you sat with me, you made no bones about that. I think you're an honorable man of integrity, even though I put the integrity thing up the other day on my Facebook that I think you like. But where are we? Are we making more money, spending more money? Because I do see improvements, and you're bragging on things that we're clearly spending money to have better libraries, schools, all of that. So, stand on your principles, Bill Henry.
So let me start with, you know, 6-7 years later, I'm still pissed off.
Oh, good.
I don't even have a good feel for how old that movie is now, but the original, the first Avengers movie.
I don't see movies, but go ahead.
There's a scene where Captain America tells Bruce Banner, you know, he needs to turn into the Hulk to get to do this fight that they're about to have.
Right.
He says, Dr. Banner, it's time to get angry. And he goes, that's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry. And he just turns around and instantly transforms into the Hulk. I try to be very low-key, and I try to be upbeat when possible. I do want to be a cheerleader for the city. But I am always frustrated at what we're not doing, even when I'm happy and proud and celebrating the good things that we are doing. I am extraordinarily happy that we are going to have a new library branch in Park Heights. I am still frustrated with the relative lack of investment we are making in the library system as a whole. I talked
to Megan a lot about that when she was running. Now she's doing Live Baltimore.
Live Baltimore. You know, Live Baltimore is an organization that exists to have more people choose to live here.
It's a marketing organization that has teeth, literally.
In Baltimore City, we, as city government, we support having more permanent residents by supporting Live Baltimore at a fraction of the level that we support having more people visit here. And that, to me, is a questionable order of priorities. But in terms of what we've been doing as the comptroller's office, and we've talked a little bit about this, you know, since I took over as comptroller, I think we have been successful at making city spending more open, more transparent. 6 years ago, if you wanted to know what we were spending on a contract with anybody to do anything, to dredge Lake Montebello or to resurface city streets, you would physically have to go down to City Hall, find a place to park, pay for it, and then go in and sit in the lobby of the comptroller's office and ask to see a paper file. Like, that's what you would have had to do. Now,
reporter work. Reporter work.
Right.
Not even easy reporter work.
Now, for reporters, for business people, for just interested, you know, residents, you can sit in the comfort of your own home, go online, pull up the comptroller's website, and you can see all the spending that the Board of Estimates approves every month, all year long.
You know, as a guy that gives lottery tickets away, I always say that I had John Martin on today from the Maryland Lottery, executive director. I say, it's on the up and up. It's on the up and up.
Well,
right?
So that's where I can talk to you about what I'm frustrated by and why I'm still pissed off. Every year, we do hundreds of millions of dollars of spending. We approve that in public, you know, at the Board of Estimates meetings. But there is a process that the city can use to do emergency procurements.
Okay.
You know, if something happens and we have to respond quickly and address it, and we don't have time for a 6 to 9 month long, open, transparent,
expedited. Maybe. You know, okay.
We can do an emergency procurement, and the way emergency procurement works, and this is in the charter, the way emergency procurement works is an agency head writes to the director of finance and says, "Here's the situation. We have this emergency. We need to do X." And the director of finance
pipes goes, broken or whatever like that. Okay,
And the director of finance says okay and approves it, and they can just spend what they need to spend, sign whatever contract they need to sign, and they can just do it. And the charter says you have to notify the Board of Estimates promptly. So you have to come back and tell the public that you did that promptly. We started to notice about 2.5-3 years ago that we were hearing about work being done, but nothing had ever come to the Board of Estimates about that work.
And so you're getting the bill, but not getting the estimate, kind of, sort of.
And we found out, that's how we found out that the emergency procurement process was being used a lot for things, and they were waiting months and sometimes years to do the formal notification of it. So we had a big public fight about it, and they agreed that going forward, they would at least notify the council president and the comptroller.
What is prompt? What is that?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. Like, what is prompt? They said, we'll notify you when we do it, and we'll send something within 30 days. And after literally years of asking, we just got a list of all the emergency procurements that they have done over the last 5 years.
Hundreds?
Hundreds of millions of dollars worth of emergency procurements. And we're still working with them to get
And the mayor wouldn't know about this?
No. Well, now the...
Individually, I'm talking about. Yeah. One by one, this is going on.
Theoretically.
It's like a hole in the bottom of the boat.
But you got to remember that both the agency head who's asking and the director of finance, they both work for...
The mayor.
The same mayor.
Right.
So, did the mayor know? Who knows? You know... I would like to think the city administrator would know. You know.
But you get the bill. The controller gets the bill.
We all get the bill because this is all being done with
our money.
Our
right,
money.
Right.
Yeah.
So what can be done? That's your complaint. Where's your solution?
Well, there's
councilman.
There's a couple solutions.
You're always a councilman once you're councilman, right?
There's a couple solutions. One is that we could have them actually follow the rules, and
that's
actually,
30 days,
and get everything to us within 30 days. That would be that would be a good start.
The money would already be spent, though.
But if you really want to fix the problem, you have to go back to how things used to work, and you have to move finance under the comptroller, so it's not one elected official making this decision.
On our money.
On our money in isolation. Because at the end of the day, right now, the director of finance is the one who determines whether it's really an emergency. But since...
Define emergency.
Right, exactly. But since
we don't have time today.
But since the director of finance works for the same person that the agency head works for, it's very plausible that the mayor is in a position to say, well, this needs to happen, so I need you to say it's an emergency. But if the director of finance worked for a different elected official, then that means the mayor would have to tell someone else and convince another citywide elected official that this is a legitimate thing that needs to be done as an emergency procurement.
All right.
Yeah.
So,
that's what we in political science call a check and balance on power.
We don't need those in America. Bill Emery is here. He is the controller of the city of Baltimore. So I saw you down in Mako 2 weeks ago. I've had people explain what Mako is in various forms. I think you've even been a guest of mine there over the years. Everybody gets together, gets down there. You've now been elected a long time in different roles and going down there. I've gotten the vibe of it out. But I get hope when I'm there in regard to black and white and right and left and Baltimore and Washington and Eastern Shore and Western Shore and Republican and Democrat. I mean, just we are a divided society in so many ways. And having gotten to know so many of the people in city government, I feel like, maybe you could. I don't want you to indict Sheila or Kathy or any of the rest of the people who are already indicted at various points, but we have a better city government than we've had in a long time. And I, maybe that's tipping the cap to you a little bit. But I've gotten to meet and get to know the current council people. There's a serious people involved in this. You know what I mean? You and Dorsey here, I didn't know if you liked each other. Hated each other. I mean, it's warm. It's fuzzy. It's this side of town and that side of town and getting along. And I'm sure he said some things you think are wacky and you said some things. Like, whatever. But there is a point of when I am at Mako or when I'm amongst city officials. I don't know about the county right now. I've been with a bunch of the county guys. And I think the county's a little bit more weird right now because they're all running for – I'm going to have Pat Young on in a couple weeks. I've had three of the other candidates on. Elections make strange bedfellows. I mean, at one point, you know, Brandon was a city council president like with you, and now he's here and you're here, and they're the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, how all this stuff works with people. But it really does come down to people respecting each other. And really, you keep saying we and our money. It's not Brandon's city. It's everybody's city, right?
That's why I'm going to take the executive branch out of the equation for a minute and just talk about the city council with, you know, with Z Cohen as the president, all 14 members. I've said this publicly. I will continue to say it. I have been someone who has paid attention to the city council for a long time. I was staff to the city council back in the 90s, working for Mary Pat and Lawrence Bell when they were council president. And then in the 2000s and the 2010s, I was on the council. And now I work with them in the comptroller
role. And you were around this with Freddie Gray. You were around this with Sheila. You were around all the bad things.
And
Kathy?
I will say the current city council that we have is the most independent city council I have ever worked with.
What
I mean by that was, if you go back a generation or more, it would especially go back to the era of when there were six districts and three members from each council.
Mayor Schaefer era. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that went
O'Malley.
Came up through O'Malley.
Sure.
When you had those multi-member districts, it was very common to have at least one, sometimes as many as two, council people in a district who their real purpose for being there was they just wanted to help their constituents. And they focused on constituent work, constituent service.
Not a bigger picture.
They weren't there to try to deal with much larger issues. They certainly weren't there to expand the idea of what we should be worrying about as a city.
The connectivity, transportation, housing, crime, all that.
They were there to take care of the people of their district. And the most effective way to take care of the people of your district was to be a reliable vote for the mayor. And if you were a reliable mayor's vote, it was easier for you to get the mayor's agencies to do the things that you needed them to do. Pick up trash, plow streets in the winter, repair streets in the rest of the year. And so there was usually a fairly good factionalization of people on the council of these people over here, they weren't worrying about the big issues. They just wanted to take care of their districts, and they were going to do whatever the mayor wanted them to vote for so that they could take
care of
the
mayor was worried about the city. I'm worried about my district.
Exactly.
Okay, got it.
What I've watched over the last 30 years has been an increase in the number of council people who are really concerned about the larger issues. It doesn't mean they stop being concerned about their district, but it does mean that they have to work harder to balance the two. And that got even harder when we moved to single-member districts because, like, Martin O'Malley, back when he was one of three council people in this district.
Right here.
In the third district. Martin knew that he could focus on issues. He could focus on public safety. He could go to war with Kurt Schmoke on the issue of were the police, being as effective as they could be. He could do that knowing that other council people from the third district could still be taking care of making sure
potholes.
Making sure that the potholes were filled, making sure that rec centers were, you know, taken care of and upgraded. Now, I mean, and you said you had Mark Conway on
sure.
the show. Like, now, with single-member districts, a council person has to make a choice. They can stand up to the mayor on issues. But that means there's nobody else who's going to be in a position to help their constituents. And that's really, to me, the most dangerous thing about the single-member districts is it puts a very different kind of pressure on the council people. You can stand up for an issue, but if you do so, you run the risk of marginalizing yourself to the mayor, and that will have negative effects on now your 14th of the city.
Bill Henry's here. He knows a lot about city politics, city government. He is the controller of the city of Baltimore. What is that? What do you do?
I run Department of Audits, the Department of Accounts Payable, which makes sure that people get their checks, not payroll. That's a whole different problem. Real estate, we act as the real estate agents for city agencies that are trying to buy, sell, or lease property, and also the municipal postal operations. We do the mail for the city, and Department of Telecommunications, we handle the phones.
What has made the crime thing better in your mind? I mean, you ran a district for a period of time and trying to get policing. You had murders in your district. We had, you know, it's been that kind of city for a long time. These numbers that are out, and we all the politicians want to crow and say it's good. I think citizens want to feel good about it, feel good about what I have felt good about lately, which is just, it's getting cleaner. It feels safer. It feels brighter. It feels like I'm not going to get carjacked. It doesn't feel like I'm in a bad neighborhood. It feels like I'm in a neighborhood that's getting better. And I go neighborhood to neighborhood, and I know how bad some of the neighborhoods were, and certainly during COVID and all of that. I go through, and I'm like, I consider living here. You know what I mean? Or whatever that would be, whatever that thought would be.
I got two words for you for crime going down and violence being dealt with in Baltimore City. Two words. Joe Biden. And the connection is Joe Biden got us ARPA, and the ARPA money.
ARPA, what is ARPA?
ARPA money, the American Recovery and Protection Act.
Okay.
Yeah, it was $600 million of stimulus money that came to Baltimore City early in the pandemic. And I'm not going to say it didn't have any strings attached, but it was fairly flexible if you were using it for the right things. And
Well, I was on the air at that time, yeah. And Mueller was with me. He's like, hey, you're getting all this money. Don't waste it. Don't waste it. Don't, yeah. Don't piss it away on something that's a one-time expense, right? Like, right?
And there, that's a whole separate concern.
Build something
that
with it, right?
That we did not use very much of it for long-term capital improvements in the scheme of things. But one of the things that ARPA let the mayor do is it let the mayor invest money into violence interruption without having to take that money away from the police department
or
something else.
Or schools or wherever, right?
And so
it was bonus money that was put toward crime.
For years, people had been saying, we can have a better, like a more effective impact on the crime rate and on violent crime by doing this kind of work. But no mayor ever was willing to take money away from something else to experiment.
Well, tough on crime, and again, I'm at this since before the plague back when you were running for controller. We didn't have any money in the city, right? Probably still don't, talking to the guy who handles the money, but the notion that tough on crime, to fight crime, we needed more police. We needed more cops.
Yeah.
We needed more cars.
Yeah.
We needed more badges. We needed more guns. We needed more, like all of that. You urinated upon that idea. Brandon did. And a lot of you got together with me and electeds got together and even some clinical people got together, and even Sarah Heminger, Thread, and different people doing things on the street. I never made it to the Safe Streets fellow before he was tragically died. Dante, correct? Yeah. So, but the idea when I talked to Brandon Scott, young black city council guy running for mayor, no money, no pedigree to do this, said, we need to talk to our young people. We need that. And to some people in the suburbs are like the people who call the people, you know, uneducated animals, all headed for prison, life of crime, all of that. You can't fix them. They're incorrigible, whatever. We're going to sit and talk to them. We're going to talk to them, Bill. Like, I don't know. It didn't play. It made some sense to me to say at some point you need to philosophically change their countenance. But between gangs, drug violence, jobs, education, access to guns. Last time I had Mayor on, we were talking about these guns that you were ordering on the internet, right? Phantom guns and all these things that were happening. The notion that sitting and talking and offering a pathway that's a better pathway, that it's working, and that a lot of people, I had a guy out of Boston that wrote books on this, former cop that had written books on this years and years ago, and was trying to explain it to me long form on the radio as I was figuring out what Baltimore Positive was going to be. It was a crime reduction strategy. It was a violence reduction strategy that began with, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're a hardened criminal. You're in a gang. You're 15. You know, you're going to get put away. You're going to be dead. Here's what we can do for you. Monitor you. Get you into school. Make sure that you got a job. Make sure that you're checking in. And you can avoid jail that way. And somehow, it's catching on, right? Am I wrong in that, or sum it up?
You know, you've actually summed it up. I will say, the mayor and I don't agree on everything. We have our disagreements on a variety of policy things. There are things that I wish the city was doing that it's not. There are things I wish the city wasn't doing that we are. But I will give props where they're due. And we are both on the same page with the idea that this kind of violence interruption strategy, where you treat the individual people involved in violence instead of
incarcerating.
Not just incarcerating, but a lot of the money that we spent, like Baltimore City does not spend a lot of money incarcerating people.
State does that.
Baltimore City spends a lot of money trying to show the flag of the police department in enough places that the people of Baltimore City feel comfortable that there are police around, believing that the police will keep the crime from happening in the first place. And that is not a good public policy approach. If you want to deal with, and one of the things we used to talk about is, if you want to prevent crime, you got to think about it the same way that you think about solving a crime. You know, we all watch procedurals. What are the three elements of a crime? Means, motive, and opportunity. Baltimore City can't address means. We're not we at the city level cannot make a substantive impact on how available guns are or aren't. That is a problem for our country and at some level for the state.
Yeah, a lot of guns that kill people come from other places.
But they all come from somewhere other than Baltimore City. Like, we're not sitting here making guns.
Right.
So we can't deal with the means. Opportunity is what the police department focuses on. The point, like, that is the point of the police department.
That's why I put stuff in the trunk and don't leave in the backseat of the car.
Yeah, and right? As individuals, we can do our best not to make ourselves easier victims by not leaving a tablet on the seat of your car. But the real way that Baltimore City has the opportunity to affect and reduce crime is motive. We're in a position...
Give them a better life,
to
right?
...to give people lives where they don't need to or feel the desire to commit the crime in the first place. That's what we could be doing. That's why I have had every police commissioner since I've been elected agree with me privately that youth development is more bang for the buck than the police department is when it comes to improving public safety.
Take a kid from 12 to 17, change their life, and then never want to have crime.
But they'll want an opportunity. But none
right?
of them are going to. None of them are going to voluntarily give up money that we appropriate them to use it to give kids something to do that isn't putting them in a bad space.
So what are we doing right? I mean, you said you agree with the mayor on certain things. Give me a couple things you agree, and then we'll talk about things you disagree, things you think you could be better.
Well, we for example, this is one of the things that the mayor has done that I applaud. He has put more money into recreation. Baltimore City in the last 4 years has built new rec centers and fixed up the rec centers
young
that we
have.
Young
people have something to do other than idle time.
One of the things we disagree with, not every kid plays in rec centers. That's why I'm really glad to see that we're building a new library in Park Heights because, I mean, I enjoyed playing in the Deweys Rec Center when I was a kid, but I lived in the Govins Library.
On the STEM part of what you're trying to do, and you know, I have the teacher from Mervo. I've had him on, and young people that have a college trajectory, not being a victim to a kid that's on the wrong side of the path, right? Like finding safe places and no idle time, and I guess more than that, a focus on something other than gangs, crime, street. All of that.
We have to focus.
And good parents and good schools and all of that.
One of the things that I was frustrated about, and I don't know if Mark Conway talked about this in his time. I know he made an issue about it during the budget season, is the Children and Youth Fund paid for most of the cost of YouthWorks this summer. They paid $7 million out of the money that goes to them to support community-based children and youth efforts throughout the city. They turned around and gave $7 million back to the city to pay for YouthWorks this summer. I think that was a mistake. It wasn't a mistake to pay for YouthWorks. I think YouthWorks is a great program, and frankly, I want to see it expanded so that year-round there are after-school jobs available for kids who need them.
What is YouthWorks?
Squeegee
Boys?
No. YouthWorks. YouthWorks is the program we run for summer employment every year. We have like 8,000 kids involved.
You live in the city, you can work in the city, we'll get you a job.
If you're a kid, you come to the city, you apply to YouthWorks. If you're committed.
So instead of going to school, you go to a job in the summer.
Right.
Make a few bucks.
You make a few bucks. At least one of the programs, I don't know if this is system-wide, but my daughter used to do this when she was in high school. She worked with an organization called Art with a Heart.
Art with Heart,
yeah.
Sure. I've had
yeah.
them on.
And they did,
Randy Pupkin's group.
They did a mural, a community mural. And so part of the work that they did was going out and talking to community members and gathering information to figure out what the mural was going to actually be like. Then they worked with the artist to actually physically paint the mural. But in and around the work part of what they did, there was a component each week for financial literacy where somebody came in.
So you're making money. Now what do you do with
it? And taught the
kids
how to better manage it. Like, this is a great program. 100% behind it.
This wasn't happening before.
Oh, this has been going on for years.
Okay.
We've been doing. But here's what I have always been frustrated with, which is for the first span of time when I was on the city council and was being briefed on this, we knew that we had several, like 10 to 12,000 kids applying for this each year, but we were only budgeting for 7 or 8,000.
So there's 4,000 more, you just said we've got no job for you, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Or worse, we would budget a certain amount of money, but then we would try to shame the business community and the philanthropic community
into stepping up.
Into stepping up and doing it. And whenever I would hear those kinds of efforts, I would be reminded, you remember those bumper stickers that used to say, you know, wouldn't it be great if schools and libraries and rec centers had all the money that they needed and the Air Force had to throw a bake sale to buy a bomber?
Right.
Like, that was the same kind of concept. Is what's your priority here if you're relying on the kindness of strangers to make sure your kids are being taken care of and treated well in the summer, but you're going to pay for whatever else?
Right.
So my thing was, we should always be budgeting to provide youth works on demand. If we know that there's going to be 10,000 kids applying, we should budget. We should be prepared to pay out of general funds for 10,000 youth work slots. But this year,
how much can a kid make in a summer like that? What are you budgeting?
I'm trying to remember. I think it's $1,500. I think the kids get a stipend of about $1,500 for the total length of the program.
$200 a week, 7 weeks, something like that.
Something
sure.
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I had a paper route, right? You know what I mean? Like, we all...
Hard to get those now.
Yeah, they don't have those now. Well, that's where the Screechy Boys come in. People say, where's the economic opportunity? You know, anywhere I can make it if I'm a kid from the streets right. in the city, right? Bill Henry's here. Our time is short. Anything else you want to see fixed or brag about or
lots
get
of,
reelected, whatever you're going
to
do?
Lots of things, but I'm going to just hold on to them and wait to get invited back because you know I love coming out and doing the show.
All right. Well, we're Coco's. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I do have some pressure lucks. I have a handful of lucky sevens left as well. Raven scratch-offs come next week. This is our final Crab Cake Tour stop until September. The Bills game is happening. Luke is doing all things football as well as baseball. We got Kyle Bradish back out on the hill. Rasig is going to be here to talk about the Bills, about Africa. It is Coco's 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
We celebrated on Sunday. So I'm going to have the delicious coconut shrimp, which is number 5 on my 27 tastiness countdown. Today's day 5 in the countdown.
Where does the parrot head chicken rank for that?
It's not in.
You don't like the parrot head chicken?
I'm glad. You know, I think you like to eat. So let me tell you how this whole thing happened. I did 25 crab cakes in 25 days 2 years ago. You participated.
I remember that.
And then I did 26, and then I did oysters last year. This year I was going to do cream of crab and Maryland crab, and they have phenomenal cream of crab soup here. Like, if I was going to pick anything, everybody knows about the crab cakes. And I tell Marcel, it's a crab cake emporium. People buy them, ship them. They're delicious. They're unbelievable. Are they the best in the world? I don't know. Come and find out for yourself. I was at Faithy's last week. I go to all of them, and they're all different, and they're all lovely. What I'm trying to do with my clients and friends and family members here is feature something else they do besides crab cakes. They don't need the help promoting the crab cakes, right? Everybody knows how good they are, and if you don't, come get one, you'll find out. But when I go to these special places, Costas is an example, they have the best cream of spinach there. The spinach dip that they do, no. This is cream spinach. It's phenomenal.
Okay.
And you can get it that way. You can get it on the Oyster Rockefeller with the cheese, which I love. And they also do unbelievable, they do great fried shrimp there, but they have great Maryland crab soup. But I wanted to feature one thing. Like Fadley's, I featured fried oysters.
Okay.
You ever had the shrimp salad at Fadley's?
I've had the shrimp salad.
Phenomenal.
Wonderful.
They do a thing here. She hand-breads these shrimp here, coconut shrimp.
Oh, you don't have to sell me on the coconut shrimp. That was the last thing I had here.
Well, there's a reason this is number 5 on the list,
yeah.
Right? And I saved this one. And I knew she had her anniversary going on this week. But this is how highly I think of the coconut shrimp here, is that it's number 5 on the list. So I'm featuring that today here at Coco's. But what I want to say to you, because this isn't going to run for a couple weeks in regard to what is number 4, 3, 2, and 1. My top 4 are not sponsors.
Okay.
One, I am very, I'm not going to tell you what they are. This is my who shot JR moment. It's my cliffhanger. So number 4, 3, 2, and 1 are not sponsors. So they're not Coco's, Fadley's, Costas, Pizza John's, any of the places that you hear ads for.
Coopers. Are they places in the city? I'm only asking that because it increases the likelihood that I know them.
How about this? Number four is in Highlandtown.
Okay.
Number three, if I tell you where it is, you know what it is.
Okay, so
it's in Little Italy.
Okay.
So number three. Number two has several locations. All three are in the city. Number one, I don't know if it's in the county or city. It's right on the line.
Okay.
It's literally right on the line.
Okay, you don't have to
it's
say
literally
you
right
don't,
on the
you
line.
Don't have to say anything. Your expression will be sufficient. Is one of them Di Pasquale's?
No.
Oh, okay. No. All right.
I did my show at Di Pasquale's 8 weeks ago. Truth about Di Pasquale's is I haven't eaten enough there. And I admitted that when I was with Joe and Domenico. I haven't eaten enough. I've taken things out, sandwiches, whatever. But I don't frequent it and haven't enough to establish exactly what my favorite thing on the. You know how I found out how good the coconut shrimp here? I ate the chicken. I ate the Greek sandwich, which is great. I had the crab soup. I had the cream of crab soup. So I try them all, and then I find, like, if you don't like spinach, you're never going to find a cream spinach on the Costa's menu. If you don't oysters, you got to go way down ballot at Fadley's to think of ordering a fried oyster to know how friggin' good it is.
I just want to ask.
You have to go down ballot here to get the shrimp. You're already doing the chicken. Everybody knows how good the soup is. Everybody here has a crab cake. Everybody orders the crab cake.
Have you ever had the Butcher's Hill cheesesteak from Di Pasquale's?
No, but I'm about to.
Your life isn't complete yet.
Cheesesteak?
Butcher's Hill cheesesteak.
I had the cheesesteak at Pizza John's as part of my feature for day 8 or 9, whatever last week was. Yeah. I don't know what week I'm in.
Yeah, is it Pizza John's?
Pizza John's pizza's great, but their cheesesteak is
Pizza John's?
Essex.
Okay, that's not the one I'm thinking of. Okay. All right.
Pizza John's in Essex that did this show there Friday.
There's a cheesesteak out Bel Air Road.
Oh, that's Frank's.
Frank's, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good.
Now, Tamburino's up in Harford County. I've heard good things about that, too.
Okay, so
J.B. Jennings told me about that.
Part of me wants to go out to Tamburino's just because they used to own Tambers in Charles Village.
Oh!
They opened Tambers. And then a couple years after they sold it to the family that has it now.
You're allowed to leave the city for food.
Yeah, from time to time.
Yeah.
It's been funny for, like, I literally, they opened that while I was in college. And so I ate there.
That was your joint.
Yeah, that was my joint.
Did you get a cheesesteak at Tambers? No. I heard the cheesesteak's good.
This is
what next year's for. Next year's 28th.
this is what I'm saying is that Tambers over the years has evolved their menu, and more of it is now focused on the Indian food, and less of it is focused on the diner food. Like the Tamburino family opened Tambers as Tambers Nifty 50s Dining, and you could get like a cream cheese and olive sandwich, which I don't think you can get anywhere else in the state of Maryland.
They make the sodas.
Yeah.
Like
it was very like Happy Days-ish.
Okay.
Almost.
Okay.
And that part has kind of eased away over the decades.
It's a diner.
And I was wondering if their place out in Harford County, more like it used to be at Tambers.
Next year I'm going to do the 28 things I didn't eat this year. So next year I'll do the chicken here. How about that for you? My wife loves that. My wife loves the chicken dish.
In that case, I'll have the coconut shrimp today.
Let me tell you one other thing that I get at Cook's. Ryan Dorsey got a burger. My wife will only eat burgers here and at Cooper's at home. She won't eat burgers anywhere else.
Has she tried Clark Burger?
We've had one Clark Burger. I had the poutine there. I get the poutine
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. She didn't buy into Clark Burger.
Look. Listen.
Okay. All right. No,
for being skinny, I eat a lot, Bill.
Yeah.
I mean, people wonder where it all goes. I have a lot of desserts. I'm actually leaving here today, and I'm picking up two different items in Baltimore City for the tour. Today's day five. I'm featuring number four. I'm picking up number fours. Some of my things are carry out. This isn't a bougie thing. This isn't Ruth's Chrissy or anything.
So these are all slightly different things. It's not like you're getting the coconut shrimp at 27 different
places. Let me give you the countdown so I can get current with you, all right? Because I texted my wife with this yesterday. I actually took a screenshot. So, because my wife's been in Florida for a couple, or excuse me, New Hampshire for a couple weeks, and she didn't know what was up. This is the real list if I go to show it to you. All right, so this is what I have so far. You ready?
Okay.
Number 27, Philly Pretzel Factory, Philly Pretzel, Harford County, north of Bel Air, just north of John Carroll.
Philly Pretzel.
Bel Air.
A pretzel with a cheesesteak on top.
No, it's just a pretzel.
Oh,
man.
It's just a pretzel.
It's a delicious Philly pretzel.
Okay.
Number 26, Towson, Maryland, Jerk Hut Eatery. The brown stew chicken. It's Jamaican.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
Okay.
Get the rice, get the peas, get the plantains, all right? Number 25, City. And for you.
Okay.
Patisserie
Poupon.
And I get the galette there. It's a Breton. It's a giant cookie. It's a giant butter cookie. It's like pound cake. Or like wedding cake, but in a cookie.
Oh, okay.
It's a Breton.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure. Like a Madeleine, but wider.
Big-ass cookie is what it is. All right. Number 24, Catonsville, the Beaumont. They do a fried lobster tail. That's my bougie moment right there, when you get the $25 lobster tail. All right?
Okay.
So some of these are dollar. My pretzel's a dollar and a half. Come on, man.
Sure.
Okay. Number 23. Fiesta Mexicana. Fiesta Americana is Mexicana. This is in Rosedale, Route 7, Golden Ring, Tres Leches. That's not one milk. That's not two milks. Three milks. They also do a pambazo there, which is a sandwich. But I'm for the Tres Leches cake. Okay, homemade. Number 22, Owings Mills, Clean Cuisine. The award-winning Aaron's Butternut Squash Lasagna.
Oh.
So they take... They take the squash, they take turkey, sausage, turkey, fennel, and mozzarella, and sweet roasted red pepper.
Okay.
Oh, it's probably too low on my list. Number 21, Old Salties, Hooper's Island. I featured their crab cake.
Okay.
Because it's Hooper's Island, and you have to drive through Blackwater Refuge. It's the loveliest drive in the state. It's the most beautiful place in the state.
Okay.
Go to Hooper's Island. Number 21. Number 20, Old Ugly Pie in Salisbury. It's right off of 50. Next year you go to Mako. Don't take that damn bypass road. Go right through Jake Day's Salisbury, right? Mm-hmm. Go right on through there. And on the right-hand side of the road, it's from here to Harford Road away from Route 50.
That's Ugly Pie?
The Ugly Pie.
That's the name of the restaurant.
It's not a restaurant. It's a bakery.
Okay.
The Ugly Pie, get the Death by Coconut. Death by Coconut. It won't kill you.
Okay.
Number 19, Cockeysville, Fuji-san. Now, it sounds Japanese, and they do Japanese stuff, but they're really a Thai joint.
Oh, okay.
You want to get the drunken noodles, and you want to get the pad Thai.
Okay. Fuji-san.
Fuji-san. You don't have to write this down. Okay. It's all up on the repository.
Okay.
Just Tastiness. Tastyness. That's the hashtag. It comes right up. And that's in Cockeysville, York, and Cranbrook. Right next to what used to be the IHOP, right next to the Cold Stone Creamery. Number 18.
Nothing says Baltimore like describing where something is by what used
what high
to be
school
there.
It is. Delaney.
Or what used to be there.
Yeah. Used to be Burke's. Now it's Rofa.
Blue
Moon 2 is number 18.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
What did I have there? You know what I had there. The Captain Crunch French Toast.
I know.
Right?
Know.
I mean, come on. Come on, right?
Yeah. Okay.
How am I doing so far? You making you hungry?
Yeah.
Number 17. These are all county, East County. You like snowballs? Egg custard.
Oh.
Icy Delight.
Yeah.
We're going to Icy Delight. Number 16, this is where I'm going to stop because this is where I am in the thing. Tomorrow, we will be featuring a place I think you've been. It wasn't in your district, but close enough. The tacos at Clavel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Am I doing all right? I only gave you 10 places here. I got 15 more to go.
I'm looking forward to Fuji-san.
So how many more in the city? I am doing my Indian tonight in the city. I'm not telling you where it is, but it's in the city. Number 12 is in the city. Number 11, it's in the county. It's a donut. Number 10, We've already done number 10. We did it at Fadley's. Okay. I did the fried oysters and shrimp salad at Fadley's. Number 9, we did the cheesesteak at Pizza John's.
Okay.
Don't skip the pizza there. But when you get the pizza there, you want to get the pineapple, the ham, and the pepperoni. Never go to Pizza John's and not get the pepperoni.
Okay.
All right? Number 8 is here in the city, and I'm going there when I leave, too.
Okay.
It involves chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hey, I'm on all this stuff here. Number 7 was Costas. We did that the other day. We're doing the Oysters Rockefeller Crab Imperial.
Okay.
Little known secret. Don't tell Marcella. I like Crab Imperial better than I like any crab cake, and I love crab cakes. But I'm a crab. Because I want to be king. You know that. Crab Imperial is royalty, right?
I feel like I had Crab Imperial once at Beau Brooks, and I feel like it ruined it for
No, you're me. Going to Costas. You're going to get okay. the Crab Imperial next time. You're out to the county. Number 6 is in the city as well. We featured that last night. That is the delicious legend. It's number 6 on my list, and we're getting real here. The gumbo at Slancha.
Oh, okay.
And Cooper's.
Yeah.
And then number 5, I'm here. I'm at Coco's. It's coconut shrimp. I'm in the city.
Okay.
There's a lot in the city, dude.
I'm just at it wasn't
a city controller. What do you think I'm selling out Baltimore?
It wasn't a complaint. It was I just was saying that if they're in the city, I have a better chance of knowing them because I'm more likely to eat in the city.
All right. Yeah. You'll find your way to Chicken Rico's, Amici, Ekebin, and Fenway. All right. Bill Henry is here. I just gave away the plot. I am Nestor. He is Bill Henry. We are doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're also doing our 27 favorite things to eat, and that's brought to you by GBMC as well as our friends at Curio Wellness. For being our guest, I'll give you a lottery ticket.
I think
you're allowed to have one. Pressure, luck, and lucky sevens. Thanks for keeping the money square. Thanks for always being a humble, good guest and a fun guy. Yeah, thanks for being a public servant. You're trying to lift the city. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Looking forward to coming back.
Former councilman, once a councilman, always a councilman. Once a mayor, always a mayor. We'll get Brandon Scott out here at some point, too, and have a crab cake at Coco's. Rasig is about to join us. Hey, Rasig, if I made you wait, it's because it's Bills week. Phooey on you. Phooey on you. You're not a real Raven fan. I'm going to give you your chance to come in here and Josh Allen it all up and do all of that. This is perfect. Rasig lives here in beautiful Lauraville. He is my original Lauraville guest. He is my co-host with a K here at Coco's.
Co-host.
And
nice.
We're going to talk about Africa. We're going to talk about Buffalo. And we're going to talk about fixing the Orioles. I'm Nestor. We're WNSD live at Coco's. Stay with us.